Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 109 of the Pico Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, we have my co-host, Namali.
Hello.
And, if you've not been living under a rock, you know exactly what we're talking about today, because we had an expansion announcement.
There was updates on 9.2 PTR.
Yeah, there was also that, but we had an expansion announcement.
One of those.
Yeah, and a whole media blitz to go with it. There's tons of interviews, tons of tidbits about the new class. I was wrong, there is a new class, and a new race, and a talent revamp.
Oh, damn it.
I was right about something. Yes. But we have a lot of ground to cover. But before we get into that, Adam, how is Holandris going?
It's exciting. It's, you never know when you're just going to randomly die and wipe. It's actually going really well. We had a full day or full sort of raid night on it on Thursday. And actually a couple hours on Tuesday, we got there a little bit early. And it was, it's honestly not as bad as a fight as I thought it was going to be. There's a bunch of like random wipes, but like, I don't get frustrated when people like mess up like a mechanic like that. Like, I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. I get more frustrated if it's like a slow burn type wipe where it's like, okay, we lost two people. We're going to die in the next 3 minutes, but we're still going to try and push and see if we do something. But no, really well. Yeah. Getting consistent P2s. We have yet to make it through the P2 to P3 transition. But we've been doing really well getting into P2. And really at this point, it's funny. We're losing people to not playing safe, which I think is like maybe I don't get to see it. So it's mostly our range, like a little fast and loose with the whatever the beams are called, cracker beams. Yeah.
Really, there's got on some people for trying to be fancy. And it's like, you're not, I'm fired up, you know?
Yeah. Like, you're not the greatest mechanical player to ever like touch a keyboard.
Yeah. It sucks, but be careful, because if you die, we all die.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's been good. Our melee have been really like, so we all range take the E1 orb. So they've been sort of really good at that. And our melee have picked up the P2 orbs pretty well. I think at this point, it's just the transition that is, we haven't seen it. I think we've seen two E3 transitions that have wiped basically at some point in that transition. So nothing beyond that yet. So no, but it's been not too bad. I think we're like 100 or so pulls in, maybe like upper 80, somewhere around that. So not terrible, not too bad.
Yeah, we're around 80. We started getting, like, we're getting through phase one consistently. Getting through phase two has not happened yet. But we haven't actually pulled the boss yet this week, because we had a disconnect power outage fiesta on Friday. We got through all of our farm, but we had no time to go and do anything with Holandris. But this is going to be the first week that we have Vantus runes on it, which is going to help, because one of the areas, like, we have a couple of pulls that would have been through phase two into the intermission if we had just a little bit more damage to beat the second reclaim.
Gotcha.
So Vantus runes plus just another round of gear plus a little bit more optimization of the damage done in the first intermission is gonna hopefully get us over that hump, and then we can start practicing the second intermission, which from what I've been told is like one of the most difficult parts of the fight, because you've got six teams of bomb carriers having to coordinate and not get knocked off or not die to shatter or missiles, and a pretty big healing check.
Yeah. The three sets of missiles over that, and what is it? Three knockbacks.
Three shatters. Two knockbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely tough. I mean, we saw, I think, to the second shatter, if I remember, and like the timing was all weird too. Cause we had, I think at that one of those pulls, we had lusted in P2 just to like push to see the transition. Yeah. And so
we lusted, we made it to 48%. We pushed.
Yeah.
Or like he started doing the stand up thing, and then somebody missed a bomb and we died.
Oh no.
So I don't really count that as an intermission to pull.
But. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been, but it's honestly not as like, weirdly enough, and maybe this is just like recency bias, but it doesn't seem as painful as Payne Smith did, which is like, so I think a lot of people.
I think one of the things that's interesting about Hollandris versus Payne Smith is Payne Smith, like you mentioned earlier, is a fight where you can limp for a while, you know, yeah. You have three people eat spikes and you just kind of limp for a while knowing that you can't kill it, but you still want to practice it.
Yeah.
Here you don't limp. There's no limping going on. If a bomb carrier dies at the wrong time, you just wipe. We do have a couple, like we have the ability to have a couple of people pick up bombs and help carry them for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that's never like, we've done that for like intermission movement. But once you get back into the next phase and you get, you know, three additional bombs, it just falls apart. So, yeah. And like Sledgefist had that too, where like you could have people that died to, you know, a chain break or whatever and keep, you know, going through the fight, going through the motions at knowing that you weren't going to have the damage check at the end.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But you could still push. Yeah. You'd still just to see like the next pillar break or whatever.
Right. You know? Right. There's that. It is interesting though, because it's like in some ways shares a lot of things with like Fate Scribe, right?
Yeah, it's true.
The difference here, I think, is that Fate Scribe was random every time,
right?
And this is under player control, so I don't know. I think it feels a lot better. The players can, we can practice it and just focus on executing it. And there's some variance, but the variance is not in who does what. The variance is in like where the tank beams go. It's in which planet cracker beams are there. It's, you know, where where the tank beams go mostly. That's like 90% of it.
Yeah. The planet crackers seem pretty like they're not random, right? They start and end, or they start up in a very similar pattern. At least
I think this first one, I think the first one's fixed. I don't know about the others. I honestly haven't paid enough attention. Like they spin around so much that I lose track of it. So I just try and open and like look and see if it's going to hit me or not. That's the only thing I care about. If it's not going to hit me, then it's fine.
Fair enough. No, but cool. Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll be on. I mean, I don't know if we get a kill this week coming up. I don't know how. I mean, I feel like you need to see. I mean, you guys should be able to make hopefully pretty good progress tonight.
In your raid, this is the kind of boss where there is a slim chance that we could just YOLO into a kill tonight, right? If we're making consistent pulls where we reach the second intermission and just get to practice that, then once you reach the third phase, you press Bloodlust, and if people play goalie, if people get their bombs, the boss should die. But that is entirely contingent on us getting those good consistent intermission 2 pulls. And this is the kind of boss where that may not happen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. It's like, it's one of those bosses too, where like you hate to see like the, not the same person screwing up, but like people screwing up a mechanic like in a similar way. And it's just like, you can't get, like, okay, like just get this unlocked. But it's like a different person each time that like is just slightly off and misses a bomb. So
yeah, I'm enjoying the fight. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad so far. So. Well, cool. Well, I think progress notes done. We did have a handful of things before we jump into expansion stuff that I think we wanted to touch on that did happen last week.
These will all be brief, but
very brief.
I think they're important, especially this first one. So those of you that have been around, especially the Brewmaster community in Peak, but you know, the Monk community in general, the Tank community in general, probably ran into Shrike during BFA. She was, I don't remember what guild she tanked in. She got Hall of Fame on the Alliance side a few times in BFA, but she was one of the like theorycrafting people, high-end raider people in Peak during BFA that hung out a lot in Discord.
Mm-hmm.
She quit the game at the end of BFA. I don't think she even did Nilotha. I think she quit after Eternal Palace. I don't remember. She's working at Blizzard now. She joined the class design team. She just this week had her introductory blue post. So go press that heart on that blue post. But this is very exciting for me.
That's awesome.
Because I don't know a ton about the kind of things that she is going to be working on. That's the kind of thing that is kept, you know, relatively hush-hush. But I do know that she is involved in the design of Brewmaster. So very excited about that, because she is someone that I think understands on like an actual, like having played the class at a high level during BFA, understands what was wrong with tanking in BFA. Not just because she played like Warrior and Paladin and Brewmaster in BFA. So she understands the broader perspective, I think. But it's very exciting for me, because it feels like maybe we'll actually have someone at that level that understands the issues with tanking that is on the class design team now. So very, very exciting news there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I will message her now and have her delete Essence Font from the game. So cool. I have my in now. No, I'm joking. No, that's awesome for Shug. It's always cool when you get to see somebody from the community, get to join the team and see what they work on. I just can't wait until, I mean, what do you think? It's probably not Dragonflight launch, but by like 10.2, we'll start to see the Strike hate posts, right? I feel like that's when they'll start to come around. When she turns from being like a beloved member of the community to a reviled Blizzard developer. No, I'm joking.
We'll see.
No, I'm joking. No, that's awesome for her to sort of get that shot and get that chance to, or really not even chance, like to get to join the team. I think she made it. So that's super cool.
Yeah. I know awesome she's been there sure. long enough that she's got her fingerprints on some of the 10.0 stuff.
Awesome.
So.
Does that mean Emelson, wait, you get beta now? Do you get it now?
I'm on the friends and family list now. Yes. So I should get alpha. We'll have to wait to see. I can't wait for there to be some kind of quirk in the system where it's like, yes. There is a typo in your
email address.
You don't get friends and family, and it just never gets corrected.
Oh, that'd be so good. That's funny. That's awesome. No, sorry, I don't mean to bring that up, but that's so good.
No, awesome, I mean, sure. That is. I'm also excited about that, because it means I should get to play alpha and beta, unlike Shadowlands, where like I didn't get beta. It was trying to do like theory crafting stuff just from logs other people, and things, which can work, but not being able to like actually log in and push the buttons is limiting. It's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, cool. That's awesome. Awesome for Strike for sure. It'll be cool to see what she gets to work on, or what she does work on, right? And see if we can actually suss out, you know, where her fingerprints actually are. So
yeah.
If Essence Font gets removed, we know who did that.
We know who to blame.
Yeah. Well, no, who to congratulate? Terrible spell. All right, moving on, before I say something stupid, the next two, just some quick hits, some things from PTR that went up. They did, improve legendary crafting. So now, instead of needing, what was it like 25 crafts or something like that?
Yeah.
You'd only need three to each level. So each legendary rank now, so to go to rank one, you know, and above, from a legendary perspective, you only need to craft each item three times. Which will severely reduce the amount of mats required to level up your professions, and makes it somewhat simpler to get to max level. So
yeah, so anybody that actually looked at like leveling crafting, leveling legendary crafting in Shadowlands, mm-hmm. would have run into this massive, massive upfront cost to actually doing so. Because people don't realistically buy the sale rate of like rank one legendaries is not very high. You can't just like make rank one legendaries and expect to turn a profit. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because people dump those legendaries for below cost in order to get them out of their bags, because they take up a huge amount of space. Because they have to craft, or had to craft, 25 or 15. They had to craft 15 of these per legendary slot per tier. So like you would go through 15 rank ones, then 15 rank twos, then 15 rank threes, and then finally you could make rank fours. Rank fours then turned into ranks five and six in patch 9.1. but you still had to go through ranks 1 through 3 in order to be able to make ranks 5 and 6. And then again, in patch 9.2, to make a rank 7, you needed to have rank 4 unlocked. And just the materials requirement was insane. This is actually a significant contributing factor to my guild transferring off of Turalyon and over to Area 52, because it was they reduced the amount of materials required to rank up a legendary by 5.
Yep.
It's
crazy.
It's kind of wild, but this combined with some of the other changes that they've made to legendaries has had a major impact on the price of legendaries, at least on Area 52. I bought a rank 9 yesterday for under 25k gold.
Like armor piece or?
Yeah, armor piece, not a
ring. Wow. Yeah, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, because rings and cloaks and stuff have generally been fairly cheap, right? Like been the main armor pieces that have been more expensive. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. So this is good. It's too late, but this will mean that for 9.2, for 9.2.5, you know, you can play an alt and not have to fork over a 250,000 gold to make your legendaries.
Yeah, exactly. No, it'll be interesting. Yeah, good change by Blizzard. Yeah, but you're right. Slightly too late in terms of this. And then I guess the other thing that hit the 9.2.5 PTR, which was data mine. So this isn't actually live. It's just data mine data. Is the faded affix, which looks to be the raid affix for season 4. So this is sort of the idea where Blizzard has stated that certain raids each week will have the faded affix associated with them, which means they'll be this new affix, plus they'll drop higher level eye level loot. So if your instance is faded or your raid tier is fated, you'll get higher item level loot from that instance, but then also you have to deal with these 1 of 4 powers, I guess. Basically, it boils down to, like, I don't think we have to read through all 4 of them. I think the idea is these powers will be active during a boss. You have to deal with them, and then you will eventually, when you deal with them, you'll deal more damage for duration after it. So the idea is they're just sort of like almost like the current mythic plus affix just now in a raid.
Where you have to, like, you currently mythic plus, you know, you kill an ad, then you get a buff. This, it's not usually killing an ad, but it is, you know, do X mechanic get buff?
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of them is there's like ads that spawn and you'll have to kill them. One's like there's a barrier that you have to shatter within a certain amount of time, you know, things like that. So, no, it seems, I mean, without having a chance to play them, they seem okay. But it seems like just a way to, like, essentially, I think this is the way they should do it, in that by the time season 4 rolls around, the hope is that most guilds who are doing progression have progressed. And so, like, this will be something fun to go back and do, like Sanctum, maybe, where you do, you know, 40% more damage or 15% more damage on a boss, and instead of, you know, just crush it, right?
It is going to be very interesting how they end up tuning, in particular mythic, because it looks like one raid per week. So it's going to be on a rotation. So you can't just do like Sanctum 3 weeks in a row or Castle Nathria 3 weeks in a row, which also means that they have to tune it to where you don't need to reprogress, you know, Stone Legion Generals or Denathrius or Painsmith Painsmith might be unavoidable, but Sylvanas kind of thing. I'm hopeful that it gets tuned a little bit on the easier side so that we can, like, you know, we'll do our main raid Sepulcher farm clear and then go and the second night do a faded clear or whatever.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, I'm thinking like Painsmith, right? Or even like KT with like a damage boost is like, you get it the wrong time and it's just like, well, now we can't break all the spikes at once, or we just destroyed the thing in the bottom tier, the bottom side guy, and we still have ads up top that are alive.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of, those are the type of fights where, like, if you push something too early, it's just a wipe.
I would honestly like it if for faded they just disabled some bosses. If they said for faded, you know, there's no Kel'Thuzad, there's no Stone Legion Generals.
I want generals in there. I want, if I gotta suffer through Council of Blood, I want generals in there.
I mean, remove Council of Blood 2, like...
That's fair.
Yeah.
That was my idea with the whole... The idea of reusing old content was like, I feel like reusing an entire old instance to do something like this just feels like it's too much. And it would be much better served of being like, okay, you have to kill these three bosses in the old instance, right? And like,
I mean, the exciting part of like going back and doing Castle Nathria again, right, is exactly like you said, there's like three bosses and it's like really exciting to go back and do that again. Yeah. It's like, I want to do Sludgefist again. I want to do Denathrius again. Yeah. I wouldn't bat an eye at doing like old Zymox again. Now that they fixed a lot of the spell queuing things with that fight. But I don't want to do Council of Blood or Stone Ancient Generals or Kel'Thuzad or Fate Scribe.
Yeah.
So
Exactly. But I mean, it'll be cool to see how they actually like put it all together. See what sort of like overpowered trinkets, you know, come back. It'll always be interesting trinket tuning, but it seems like the idea is like these sort of powers will be, they basically are like, yeah, you're right. Do a mechanic, gain damage buff. And the mechanics right now are like different. There's four of them. So
yeah,
because we'll see more once it's actually live on PTR. So
yeah.
Okay.
We spent enough time, right, talking about not Dragonflight things.
That's true.
Now almost 25 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
The whole rest of the episode, everything from here on out is all expansion all the time. So we have a spreadsheet from our predictions podcast last week. Let me actually see if I can find it again because I closed it.
It's linked in the notes.
It's linked in the notes. All right, I got it. We have some predictions.
Yep.
And we have actual... we have how we did. So you want to briefly go through like what we got and what we got right, what we got wrong.
Yeah. So I think so we sort of broke this up as like the way that it's sort of broken up here is you have like the top are more like procedural or like, are they going to announce dates of anything? The middle is sort of what we think are locks for like these things should occur. And then the bottom section was sort of our like, hey, nice to have, you know, maybe we're going to go crazy and get this type of stuff. So basically, like, I think Emelson and I both, or I said, basically, my predictions around, like, announcement of dates and things like that were essentially no announced date, but I said they'd give a quarter. I mean, like, they would say, we're going to sort of announce in, or we're not going to give a true date. It'll be, like, quarter one, 2023, right? I also said no announced dates for, like, alpha and beta. And so what we did get out of those is, number one, did not get an announced date for the release of Dragonflight. So we were both wrong. I think, Emelson, you said quarter one of next year. We also didn't get an announced date on alpha or beta or the end of, or when season four would start.
We got no dates.
No dates at all for anything. So we sort of struck out huge on that piece. We did get an announced date for Wrath Classic, which I don't care about. People love Wrath.
You get an actual specific date or just like?
Yeah, well, 2022. So quarter four. Yeah. Sometime before the end of the year. Right. So we were sort of batting 1,000 already in terms of like, well, we said, I think we're right about the no alpha beta announced date. I thought they'd at least give us a target for expansion release though. We both did. Not good. So next up was they sort of, our announcements were all around like dragon flights, being able to like pick them and like there'd be abilities tied to these. I think at this point we don't know enough to say if we're right or wrong here, other than there was an interview that Ian gave that talked about renowned coming back, whether you can gain renowned with all the flights at once. You can have to pick one, which makes me think that it's more on your side of like more cosmetic things with each dragon flight versus any power associated to it.
Yeah, so. I'm comfortable taking like half credit for that one because it doesn't sound like you're going to pick a cosmetic dragon flight. It does sound like you are going to pick a dragon. So we'll get a little bit into the dragon riding in a minute. But when you unlock dragon riding, it sounds like you are going to pick a dragon.
Yeah, but it's maybe based on the dragon flight,
or maybe like a thing tied to like which initial set of dragon riding bonuses you start with or something like that. But the dragon flights, Ian did mention in an interview that Renown is coming back, as far as like, obviously yeah. it's still a little bit early, but they're planning on having it come back, and it's going to be like their reputation for the four different dragonflights, or five different dragonflights
that exactly.
you're going to be interacting with.
Yeah, so I missed that one big time, but I think you were close. Next up is, we talked a little bit about new zones and stories. So I called it, I'm taking 100% credit for this one. Five new zones. I basically, my prediction was five new zones on a new continent. But I said there'd be, I can't take the full one. But I said there'd be cosmic stuff in the story. One. I forgot about that. Damn it.
I think you added that specifically to oppose me on this one.
Not that you wanted it,
you just didn't have the hopium that I did. So I had that the story was not going to be cosmic. It was going to be very, very grounded, almost like anti-cosmic. And so that's what we got. They actually, like, they didn't use those exact words, but they did make a point of saying, like, we're going back to old lore. It's going to be a grounded story. We're going to be on Azeroth doing Azeroth things with Azeroth characters. Right.
Exactly. So I feel like we split that one. God damn. But no, I think the new zones will be cool. Five new zones, you know, four on the Dragon Isles, and then one new starter zone. So for the Invokers, which is cool. Next up was common versus split capital cities. I said common cities, you said split. Yep. I don't know if you said that just to oppose me, but we got one common city. It's Valdrakken is the name of it.
It was 50-50, right? Like,
that's true.
I was just guessing.
That is true. So that's an easy one. And then here we go. New class. So I did say new class. I think when we did this, there had been enough push for this. I said it was going to be a leather class and healer DPS. So, and then your opposing view is no new class, no new specs, but a new talent row or talent revamp was sort of your prediction.
Yes.
So we did get a new class. We did get a new race. They are a male user, a male armor class, and they are healer DPS. So 50%.
I'll give you like 90% credit on that one. Like, all you missed is that they are male instead of leather wearers.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you missed.
And I think when we talked through this too on the show, last week's show, I think I said I didn't think talent revamps were coming. I was pretty down on it.
Yeah, you did.
So no, we get an entire talent revamp.
Yep, we got actually a huge talent revamp, which that's a second topic we're going to spend a lot more time on in a couple minutes, because there's a lot to go over there. We're getting talent trees back. It's a pretty big shift. It's different from the talents that we've had previously. It looks great. We're going to spend time talking about it, but We also had predictions that AP would not be coming back. I think we were both on the same page for that one. No AP, no anything that looked like AP, nothing like that. We were spot on there. We also both, or you had on here, revamped the old world content, like Chromie time kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a take on that one. We know we are not getting an old world revamp, even for a limited number of zones. We are getting a new starter zone for Invokers, which is, I think, going to be closer to what like the DK or Demon Hunter starting zones are like.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we know that all of the old zones, or all the old expansions, including Shadowlands, are going to become leveling content for levels 1 through 60. So you can, for example, like right now, you can go 1 through 50, and then you start Shadowlands. When 10.0 releases, you're going to be able to go 1 through 60 in any of the expansions, and then go 60 through 70 in Dragonflight zones, which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah, which will, the SL stuff added, I think, is nice. But no, it was slight thing. But yeah, you're right. I think even Blade Sabers in chat saying like, yeah, I think they should do some stuff with Chromie time. Sort of, that's a thing. Next up was, we sort of progressed. I sort of talked a little bit about Mythic Plus and dungeon design, right? And I think we were both right. I don't know if we know much about dungeon design at this point, but they did basically talk a little bit about Mythic Plus in season one of 10.0, which is, it's going to be split. So there'll be four new dungeons in the Mythic Plus pool. and four old dungeons from older expansions in the pool. They didn't really say what expansion they're from, just not from the current expansion. It's sort of the setup they're thinking about right now.
So we were both predicting that we would have more time walking Mythic Plus. And so we're correct on that. I had said that we wouldn't be getting it until that after the first season. I thought they would do something like this, you know, in season two, but then season one would be all Dragonflight keys, right? But that's not what we're getting. We're getting season one, four Dragonflight, four not Dragonflight. Season two, the other four Dragonflight dungeons. So we're still getting eight dungeons on release, but only half of them are going to be in the Mythic Plus pool. The other half in both seasons are going to be four different dungeons from another expansion or multiple expansions. I think they also confirmed that we would not have Shadowlands dungeons in season one. Which is correct. There should not be Shadowlands dungeons in season one.
I agree.
One thing that I think is interesting about this is that Mythic Plus, while very popular, is still not something that is done by casual players. So the only, like, the only people it really affects not having all eight dungeons at once is really like the higher end community, the more serious players, because you're still going to be able to do all eight dungeons from release, the whole expansion. Like, you're still going to be able to, you know, looking for dungeon queue into all eight right away.
And I think the only thing, and the only time that I think this will cause a bunch of issues in the community, if, again, is going to be based on the gear that drops, which is the one thing that I think is going to be maybe the only issue, is that, like, if there is a very good, I mean, I'm going to talk about trinkets, because trinkets are typically the things that cause this, but there's a very good trinket out of a non-Mythic Plus dungeon in 10.0, like a just a dungeon that is on the Mythic Plus menu that drops a great trinket for its item level. People are going to be upset that they can't get that at a higher item level and use in other content, right? Like, if for example, like Mists wasn't a part of the Mythic Plus pool and you couldn't get Changeling, like at a 270, whatever the 272 or 278 item level, like, people would complain about that.
I don't think they really would, unless it could come from the vault. If it could come from the vault, but not from being able to actually run the dungeon, I think people would be upset by it, which is what happened in Legion with whatever, what's it called? Violet Hold. The Violet Hold, you could not do as Mythic Plus, but you could get loot from Violet Hold in your box at max eye level. So there were like a handful of tanks in the world that had one of the best tank trinkets in the world. Because it was not worth using at base Mythic eye level, but it was worth using if you got it out of your box, and it was worth using over like everything.
Okay. Yeah, that could be a worse situation. No, I agree. So, I mean, it's either in, we'll see. I'm not 100%. I don't know if I 100% agree with you, but I mean, I agree that if it dropped from your box, even at max item level, and you couldn't sort of farm it from the dungeon, that would be the worst situation. It not dropping at all, I think people might still have a little bit of an issue with that.
I think it really depends, because like Changeling is a trinket that is, just, it's a replaceable trinket, right? The only reason people want it is because it is above rate on the effect it gives. Like, it gives more stat than another trinket, right? If there's something like, you know, scale for tanks, or I don't even know, like the ruby for casters, where it's just like, it's the only trinket that lines up with your 3-minute cooldown, or IQD is the only trinket that lines up with your 3-minute cooldown. And if you don't get IQD, there's not really an equivalent, because there's nothing else that lines up. They're all like 2-minute or 1-minute cooldowns, and so they're not going to line up with your 3-minute. That's the kind of thing where you start, people get maybe a little bit tiltier about, because then they can't just replace the trinket with one that has more stats, right?
Yeah.
Like Changeling and other proc trinkets, you can just replace with one that has more stats, because that's all it is a stat stick.
I mean, in general, yes. But the problem is, like, it's the best stat stick in the game right now, for Mistsupers at least. So, like, the idea is, like, there isn't really a replacement for Changeling. Like, even at 268, it's the best trinket you can get, or whatever.
Well,
like the 13.
If, if it's not this, because you can only get it at eye level, you know, as an example, at eye level 230, like a changeling at 230 is not worth wearing over trinket from keys. I don't think people will care. Like, I think they might care if like the hypothetical changeling from season one is good enough to wear over a season two trinket that you can no longer get the hypothetical season one changeling, then people I think will be upset. Speaking That's of fair. My top simming trinket combination for my monk is Tirithon's Betrayal at eye level 259. I mean, obviously I want to upgrade it, but at eye level 259 and Faulty Countermeasures, both of which are from the same Legion Time Walking Dungeon.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Actually wearing a 259 Tirithon's Betrayal is better than wearing my 278 Skolex trinket.
That's funny. That is funny. All right, well, let's move on a little bit because we have to some deep dive.
We got some stuff to get through.
So yeah, so I basically called no new legendaries crafted I called it more shitty legendaries as crafted slash dropped was my prediction. I hated making this one, but I thought they'd continue it. I think you sort of changed it to artifacts, basically going back to the artifacts from Legion.
Yeah. Idea. I expected that we would get some kind of smaller, more constrained borrowed power system.
Yeah.
And the TLDR is that we're not. There's no borrowed power system. There's no legendaries. What they are doing is basically saying, well, there's a bunch of older legendary effects and that kind of thing that we're putting in the talent tree. And as you level from 60 to 70 and you get your last 10 talent points, you're going to be able to unlock new effects that are, you know, that powerful. They're going to be like legendary effects, which we'll get more into the design and structure of the talent trees in a minute, but it is, so basically there's no artifact, no legendary, no anything like that. It's just talents and tier sets and your class.
Yeah, and I think Ian did leave the door open, at least when they asked the interview questions, about like the fact that legendaries may come back, but it'll be like a single legendary versus like a suite of them.
Yeah, it's also something where like he left it wider open for future expansions. He's like, we're never going to say never. Legendaries might come back in the future, but they are not going to be a Dragonflight thing. Or at least like legendaries in the Shadowlands Legion style are not going to be a Dragonflight 10.x thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So the door is open there for you to actually get your thing that you wished for of this like quest-based raid legendary.
Yeah, but which would be perfect.
Nothing for 10.0.
Yeah. And the final sort of thing that we sort of, I think, settled on, or not the final thing, but in our sort of typical, not our wish list things, was we talked about like no tier for the first tier, but tier afterwards, which they didn't confirm. Or sorry, first, no tier for the first raid tier, but tier afterwards. They didn't confirm it. However, there was this screenshot of concept art for what looked like tier sets. So don't know, but,
This is something that is, I think, still up in the air. Because, like, you in Emerald Nightmare, for people that remember, you got Nighthold tier colors. Like, it was actually the tier models and colors from Nighthold. But it was not a tier set. It didn't have a tier set bonus. Graphically, it was a tier set. Like, in terms of the equipment you put on and what it looked like when you put it on, it was a set. It went together, but it didn't have a set bonus, and that's the distinction. So no news on whether there's a set bonus in 10.0. We do know they confirmed that there will be carrying tier sets forward in Dragonflight, and actually the way that they said it, I actually do think we are going to be wrong on this one. I think we're going to get the tier set in 10.0 because it just
which,
said
which like, isn't bad
it, yeah so we will see. But I suspect we are going to end up wrong on that one.
Gotcha. Fair. I just want to hit on one more from our predictions list and then we can sort of move on. But the only thing I want to talk about was just, so I basically said there'd be no new level cap and everything would be progression based on story. This was sort of my off the wall idea. I think Emelson, you were sort of saying like, no, we'll do a stat, we'll do a squish back to 50 and we'll re-level to 60. Basically, yeah. They said the new level cap's 70. So basically, yeah. Just like every other expansion, you get 10 more levels to sort of level through. They're both kind of wrong there, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I was wrong. Like, to be clear, I was wrong. We're not getting the re-squish and level to 60 again. But in a way, I am also right, because it is what we're getting. We're getting 10 new levels.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We're getting the ability to go through all the old stuff up to the new level 60 pre-expansion cap. So it is very similar in effect. It's just the numbers don't get smaller. So that is something. It is also interesting. This came up a couple of times. If you recall some of the things, some of their reasoning for doing borrowed power systems, it was a lot of concerns about continuing to add on to like core systems expansion after expansion after its mm-hmm. expansion, and having like 80 point talent trees and things like that. And Ian said in multiple different interviews that they are not going to be letting the sustainability of something over like a 10-year window get in the way of making something that is good and interesting in a 2-year window, right? Like, they're not worried about the new talent set structure not working 3 expansions from now. I think they've come to terms with the fact that they can take things away. They can take things away from core systems, rebalance them. In 3 expansions, we can compress levels and compress talent points and everything. It came up in the context of the leveling as well. They were like, we're not sure if this, you know, mode of like, we're going to probably get back into triple digit levels again, and then we'll squish again and
push again. Yeah. But I think just to sort of expand upon that a little bit, it's almost, and as much as we hate borrowed power systems, it's almost like they needed to do it. And like, to get
they
a
needed
feel
to
for
learn
being
the
able to,
problems.
We'll learn the problems with, but also learn that like players are okay with like you taking some things away, as long as you like, like you don't like, I think the problem with borrowed power is they try to make it interesting at a class level or like your spec level. Right. And where like players want something like common thread and then smaller borrowed power systems bolted on, and then you can pull those out. Right. And if you eventually have to do a full talent revamp because you can't add, you know, a 13th tier of talents where now we have 100 points to put in a tree.
Right.
That's fine. Then squash it, because you've done the squash once already. So do it again and then remake talent trees. Right. Which, it's, me saying this sounds like it's a lot easier, but I think also like from a Blizzard perspective, like realizing that, you know,
now that they've done it once, they can do it again and it will be easier.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, but no, I think that's, you go. I was going to segue, but I think it's like you got.
Yeah. Before we get into stuff, I think dragon riding is next on our topic list.
I was going to let you go first.
Dragon riding or talents. Oh, well, one of those two things is next on our topic list. Their Faust in chat, actually has a pretty interesting point about Mythic Plus in 10.0. So they said that their primary concern with 10.0 Mythic Plus is travel time to old dungeons. A lot of alts don't have old expansions unlocked, flight points, etc. This actually came up in Legion Time Walking, because some of my alts do not have a Legion Hearthstone. And so actually getting to the Legion zones, like they were created post-Legion, post like being able to, you know, do the time walking, leveling, and other expansions. So they just never did Legion. They don't have any of that unlocked. So that was kind of a small problem. But I think it is moderated by the fact that you only need 2 people out of your 5-player group to actually be able to get to the dungeon, you know? Yeah. So it was never like it's going to take me 20 minutes to get over there. It was a, you all need to get over there and summon me, because otherwise it's going to take me 20 minutes to walk there.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. As someone who has generally only played the same character since MOP, like legitimately the same character, I generally don't run into this ever in terms of like not having a flight point or not having something discovered. So,
I mean,
I
like
can see
my,
that though, yeah.
My hunter and my monk are that way. And Dead My Paladin, they're all the same character that I've had since Legion. And so they have everything unlocked, but then I went to do something on my DK. My DK doesn't, and my DK got created in Shadowlands. So like I have another DK, but I didn't want to transfer it again.
That's fair.
This was before the transfer bundles. So,
oh yeah, it's true.
So I didn't want to transfer it again. So I just leveled another one.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
And I didn't do Legion.
Wouldn't pick that one either. And actually, sorry, there was a handful of quick hitter things I wanted to talk about before we jump into our deep dive. So a couple of quick hits just for people. Number one, if you're listening to this, Dragonflight beta signups are up. So like go to World of Warcraft main site. You can opt in. You have to opt into all their betas. Opt into that so that you can maybe get a shot at being Emelson and never getting it, or being me and getting it three times on a single account.
Yes, it's you random. Cannot get picked for beta unless you go and you opt in. So if you don't go and opt in, you cannot get into beta, and you don't get to complain about not getting into beta.
Exactly. They did also release the class color for Invoker. It is a deep teal color. So it now we have
a superior Mistweaver color.
It's a superior just monk color in general. Like this, like not only is Mistweaver losing out to Dispriest with Atonement, now we're losing our color to Invoker, probably our raid spots to Invoker too. Class is dead at this point. So they're a deep teal, another green, very, very cool. So two more things then. 10.0 is on the CDN. So we talk about this a little bit, but CDN Content Delivery Network, it's where they post all of their patches and things like that to easily grab them. There is an encrypted buildup on one of the WoW, I think it's WoW Dev 4, which people are saying at this point will be where 10.0 lives, which means we may see an alpha sooner rather than later.
So WoWhead has a breakdown on the timelines for previous or for Shadowlands. So the encrypted Shadowlands build went up on February 19th, 2020. And the actual alpha started about 6 weeks later. So that's still a pretty solid amount of time. I am fingers crossed for actually getting alpha sooner than that. But, you know, I am not going to hold my breath.
Yeah. No, but it seems like it's going to be hopefully a May, end of May, early June type release for alpha, which will be fun. So,
yeah.
And then the final thing, the cinematic for Dragonflight. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It's absolutely amazing. I care more about that Watcher than I care about any other character in Shadowlands. And he was only on the screen. They were only on the screen for like 2 minutes. There was tears in my eyes as he fell from that tower. And I was just like, don't die. And then Alexstrasza comes to save him. And I'm like, ah. So I was super hyped. The Watcher's dope.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, cinematic.
You know the name of the Watcher. He has an actual name. Unlike, it sounds like an actual like character that they planned to be a character, because he's like apparently tied to something with one of the reps or something like that.
Oh, really?
I may be mixing things up. I might be mixing things up. But the name is Keranos.
Oh, okay. I think I read that too, actually. I think I read that too.
So the name is Keranos. So this doesn't seem like a Zappy Boy situation where they had a character in one of the cinematics that people loved, and then they just like retrofitted it into the story. This sounds like it was planned, but it's great.
I'm so hyped. I cannot wait to care about this lore, Emelson. I'm reading calling it today. I'm going to read every quest eventually.
You're not going to read every quest.
We'll try. Okay. We'll try real hard. All right, cool. Well, then I guess now we do our little deep dive. So each of us picked, Emelson and I each picked one system. We wanted to deep dive a little bit more. There's a ton of other information. We'll probably spend some time diving into other things that happened from all the sort of media blitz, but we didn't want to sort of try and jam an entire sort of expansion announcements amount of information into a show. So we each picked two systems. I picked Dragonflight. Or Dragon Riding, I guess, is the name of it. And then you took the new talent trees. So I guess you can go first. We talk about talents first.
So for the people that are watching this on Twitch or YouTube, I'm gonna put the Restoration Druid work in progress talent trees on the screen so you can actually see what we're talking about. For the people listening, what we've got here is basically two talent trees that you're gonna get. You're gonna have your like if you're a monk, if you're a Mistweaver monk, you're so there's still specs. We're not going back to the old like pre Cataclysm days where it was just talents. There was no specialization that restricted your talent options. You're gonna hit level 10. You're going to pick a specialization that's gonna unlock your talent trees. You're gonna have two talent trees. One of them is your class talent tree. So like for monk, we'll have a monk talent tree that is shared between all three specializations. And then there's going to be a spec talent tree that is specific to your current specialization. So, and from the sounds of it, it's not strictly like alternating, like one level you get a class point, the next level you get a spec point. They didn't commit to that. I would not be surprised if that's how it ends up working, where you like every other level you get a, like you just alternate between them as you level up. But the other thing that's interesting is there's a lot of like core, what we would call core spells in these talents. A huge amount of core spells in these talents. One thing they also said, so the class talent tree is going to have different starting locations for different specializations. And so the reason for that is that you can see things like there's Iron Fur in the Druid talent tree. There's no monk talent trees available yet. So I'm sorry, I'm talking about Druids. But there's Iron Fur in the Druid class talent tree. And obviously Iron Fur is like a core thing for Guardian Druid. So you're going to presumably start closer to Iron Fur when you're a Guardian Druid than you would if you were a Restoration Druid. There's also the Interrupt, the Guardian slash Feral Interrupt is also in the talent tree.
Which means presumably Resto Druids can pick it up. If they
invest it is points. Selected. Skull Bash is a selected talent on this Restoration Druid talent tree.
Which is interesting. And you actually, I don't know if you noticed, but you can tell where the Resto Druids start because Rejuve and Swiftmend don't have points next to them. So you assume that those are given as their starting point. So maybe that's how they'll end up doing it. So maybe like with, if you're like a Guardian Druid, you start with Iron Fur and like, what's the one below that? The one that looks like a hide, whatever.
Thick Hides. That is passive bonus. It's like,
Passive increased armor
while in bear form. Yeah.
So maybe that's how they end up doing like the starters for the class trees. So
yeah. So this is like really neat. Never will you again have to go into a key. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I was about to say you would not need to worry about like the healer not being able to kick and the healer being the only person willing to kick. Now you're going to have to deal with DPS not talenting into interrupts.
Very excited about that. Very excited.
But so the other thing that they said about this is one of the things they did not like about the mop style talent trees is you had these like clear, like either you take A or you take B. And when you had utility versus damage, people just always go with the damage. They just every time they just go with the damage or the healing or whatever throughput thing they can pick. They just consistently pick that, even like unless the utility is absolutely mandatory.
Right.
You know, they're just taking the throughput option. The like class tree is going to be mostly just utility. It's going to be your interrupts. It's going to be your knockbacks, your cyclones, your typhoons, mighty bash. Those are all things that are selected in this talent tree. By the way, this druid is actually talented into cyclone, mighty bash, interrupt, innervate, typhoon, and wild charge at the same time.
Yeah,
which is wild.
I don't have enough T-binds.
Wild.
I don't have enough.
So there's that. And then the other, the spec talent tree is going to be more of your throughput things. It's going to be, you know, your spells or your procs that increase, you know, your throughput. Something like, for a brewmaster, something like Black Ox Brew would be in the spec talent tree. That's not utility, it's just throughput. Black Ox Brew versus light brewing might be an option in the spec talent tree. not an option in the core class talent tree. I do wonder where things like Celestial Brew or Purifying Brew or Stagger will end up with on the class talent tree, or if they'll end up on the spec talent tree. Because like druids can spec into stuff, like they've got a bunch of bear stuff selected as a restoration druid.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be able to or are we going to be able to have like Mistweavers running around with Stagger? Is Windwalker going to get Stagger? That would be cool as hell.
It would be interesting. Yeah, what exactly they put in the class trees, because like the other thing I was talking to a couple of people about too was like there's certain cases where, we've mentioned like talent points, but I think the other part about this is like the talent points are either like passive increases to things, actual active abilities, and there's a third thing, which is a choice, where like you basically talent into something, you can choose one of two things. And I was having a conversation, people being like, well, do you think monks, like Mistweavers, will get an interrupt? And I was like, maybe, but it would be cool if your interrupt was not just you picked it, it was a choice. So like for Mistweaver, maybe you got the choice between Ring of Peace and interrupt. They do similar things, but like Ring of Peace has
to be used more. They don't really do similar things.
You can use Ring of Peace as an interrupt, like in most cases.
Sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not useful all the time, but it would be an interesting if the utility choices like that were actual choices between two things versus just talent down and far enough and get interrupts, right? And maybe I'm thinking a little too much into it, but
there's a higher level choice here where like in this particular screenshot of this particular talent build, this druid has talented into Skullbash. So they've got as restoration druid an interrupt. What they had to give up for that is Ursul's Vortex. They don't have Ursul's Vortex. That's a pretty major CC ability. They just don't have. So there's obviously some tuning that's going to need to happen on these, but there's the higher level choices of like maybe Ring of Peace and Interrupt are positioned in the tree such that, you know, if you're starting as a Mistweaver, you have to just pick one branch to go down. You don't get both. Whereas if you're a Windwalker or a Brewmaster, you start in the tree at a location that you can pick up both.
Yeah.
So the other thing here, when they originally switched from the, OG style talents to the Mists talents, one of the things they said they wanted to get away from is these like minor talents that didn't feel like they did much. That they have done in this. I already mentioned there's a bunch of abilities in here. There's like core abilities in these talent trees. There's also just like, there's three different kinds now of nodes in the talent tree. It's not just a talent, you know, in if you go and you play Burning Crusade Classic, there's your talents, 99% of them are passives. And then there's a couple active abilities, especially at the end of a tree.
Right.
These are, so in the new talents, they've actually like iconified that or codified that, where now if you have a square talent, a talent with a square border, that is an active ability. So when you go and you pick that up, that's an active ability. You get it. It goes on your hotbar. You get to push that button and do a thing. And then there's talents that have a circle. So those ones are passives. So in this particular druid one, there's iron fur, which is a square. So that's an active ability. And then below it, there is that thick fur one that I mentioned earlier, which is a passive that increases your armor and health in bear form.
Gotcha.
Then finally there's a third type, which you mentioned. There's the hexagon. Yep. The hexagon is one that you click it and you get to make a choice between multiple things. So in a way it actually integrates both the old style talent trees and the new Mist talent trees, where, you know, now instead of picking between three things every like 15 levels or 10 levels, you pick between one thing and another thing when you reach one of these hexagon talents. For those of you that go and look up these screenshots after or looking at it on the video, there's also these diamonds on the side. They confirmed that those are actually going away. Those are not going to be part of the final design. They were a thing they were toying around with and are not going to be part of the final talent rebuild. So yeah. That does mean also, of course, massive grain of salt. These are not final talents. And so don't read too much into it. But I do think it is intentional that they put Skullbash on a Restoration Druid here.
Yeah.
In order to indicate that that would be possible.
Yeah, which will be, it'll be interesting to see if every healer gets a shot at their interrupt, right? Because right now, that's one of the things that people always complain that shamans get that no other healer gets, which is an interrupt.
Right. Which it's also the, so they also posted the Balanced Druid talent tree for comparison. And it's the same, basically the same, like, Druid talent tree. The Restoration Druid, so the Restoration Druid started with Rejuve and Swift Mend. The Balanced Druid starts with Starfire and Sunfire. Yeah, it's weird because it's inconsistent because there's Moonfire and Sunfire, and then there's Starfall, which is the AoE one, right? And then there's Starfire and Wrath, which are their like builder spender things. But Skullbash is still on the Druid talent tree. They did not talent into it, and you can see they would have had a long way to go in order to talent into it. They would not have been able to pick up. They got Ursula's Vortex, they got Typhoon, they got Wild Charge, they got Heart of the Wild, they got Cyclone. Like, there's a lot of stuff that they picked up here that they wouldn't. They would have had to sacrifice some of those in order to spend all the points that would be required in order to go and pick up Skullbash.
Yep.
But you can also see that Solar Beam, their like minute long AoE silence interrupt thing, is in the balance tree. So you could, in theory, as a Boomkin, pick up Solar Flare, whatever it's called. The Boomkin interrupt as we know it now, the Boomkin interrupt and Skullbash, and use them for different things. Or you could skip, you could in the balance tree skip Solar Flare entirely and go just go for Skullbash. And so that's a very interesting decision right there. It's not even that, like, they're not competing directly in the same tree, but because they do similar things, well, maybe you go a different route in the balance tree and then a different route in the Druid tree, and they complement each other like that. Like, that's very interesting.
Yeah. There's a lot of choice here. And I think the one thing that they need to make, like, at least Blizzard as they design this needs to make sure, is it doesn't become too complicated, right? Like, the biggest thing with the way that the trees are sort of set up is the old trees were very much like linear in terms of their progression. So, like, when I say old trees, I mean like the pre MOP style of putting points in a tree. They're very linear, where like essentially there was rows, and you had to use 5 points in a row before. Well, it was 5 points each time you wanted to lock the next row. So you need to use 5 points to unlock row 2, 10 points to unlock row 3, 15, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty easy from a progression standpoint to understand. It seems like here they're doing more of a, you basically just need to unlock the talent previous to what the one you had.
Right. There's a ton of, like, for those that the audio people, there's a ton of arrows on this thing. There's so many arrows, like arrows, like, from talents to talents, like all over the place. Would highly recommend going and pulling it up on Wowhead, pulling it up on some fan site, and just looking at it, because it's different. It invokes the idea of the old talent tree, but it's significantly different in implementation.
Yeah.
So
reminds me a little more of like a PoE style tree, where like you just have to connect the nodes. Not as extensive as PoE. So don't, like, that's like,
yeah,
1,000 times more complex than this, but this is definitely the idea of like connecting nodes versus just using enough points to get to the next tier.
Yeah. Which there's a lot of stuff they can do here, I think, to make the user experience, like, make it clear what you need to do. Like, if you mouse over a talent that you haven't gotten yet, you know, highlight the shortest path from or highlight all of the paths, you know, something to show what you would need to spend in order to get that.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. I think the other thing too that they're trying to add into all this is like talent sets. So like in the UI, there's like in the bottom right hand corner, there's like a drop down that has like saved talent sets. So you might be able to, and also like in, I think in one of them, it says like export or import with the idea of being able to
import
like,
these. So those of you like there's a classic, classic talent builder. Oh, okay. All right. Well.
They clarified that in an interview was like, they want to do this, but they showed it in the UI, the ability to like share these talent trees and then import ones that get shared to you.
That would be huge. Like, honestly, one of the neatest things is actually like one of the neatest things in the game is weak auras and how it lets you make something and share it with people. Like that is the essence. Like there's so many games and companies they've tried to glom onto this whole like social network thing that totally missed the point and just like put the ability to tweet in the game. Being able to make a talent build and then share it with somebody in your raid is like, hey, I've been playing this. Oh, yeah. Like if you got three Boomkins in your raid, like we do right now, if one of them goes, hey, I've been doing this instead of that on Helandra's, and being able to just like share it in chat and then the others can, you know, gather around the tome and switch to that and try that out.
Yeah.
That is the coolest shit. That is just like amazing.
Yeah, or I mean, that's the cool side of it. Then the dark side of it is like someone joining your Mythic Plus group, looking at your talent tree and then linking you something that's like, please play this so we don't fail. And then if you don't swap, they leave the group, which is like the dark side. To be fair, I think that'll be a minor like thing of it because like I'm not going to care what other people think it, but
I think the worst that it will get is please take your goddamn interrupt. That is something that I expect to deal with a lot. Please take your interrupt.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, this whole thing is super cool. They did confirm, so talents, there's not going to be a respec cost. We are getting like tomes for inscription are going to continue to be a thing. If you want to change your talents out in the world, you pop a tome, you can switch your talents around just by using that. The talent sets, they did confirm, so we're going to be able to swap between those pretty freely. So like if you're in town, go nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Just go nuts. Like you can swap them just like you could in town right now. So it's basically taking a lot of the pieces that make the existing talent system nice in comparison to the old like BC talents. Like I am my rogue that I kind of wish I had spent talents maybe slightly differently in a couple places, but I don't want to go and spend the money to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So and when this is another place where they talked about back in original classic, you know, people played hybrid builds. They played a build that was like okay in raid and okay in dungeons, but wasn't, you know, optimized for both. And that was, I think, part of what informed their design of covenants for Shadowlands. Like you could pick a covenant that was like okay for two different things, but not the best for either. Mm-hmm. But then they went and looked at how people actually used talents in WoW Classic, in Burning Crusade Classic, and people just play the optimized builds all the time. If you want a raid, you play your optimized raid build. If you want a PvP, you swap to your optimized PvP build. And so gold just became this speed bump actually doing that. And so they were like, why would we... This is also an encouraging thing for me. This is one of the things that makes me excited about the expansion is they said, why would we reintroduce that kind of speed bump for players? Like if the thing is just like you have to go and grind gold in order to change your talents, why would we make that?
Yeah, it just doesn't.
So now you basically... For tomes, you're paying for the convenience of being able to change your talents out in the world, or it's a kind of raid consumable where it lets you change talents before in between bosses without going back to town. But you can always go back to town and change your talents.
Right.
Always go back to town and change your talents. So yeah, I'm very excited about this whole thing. It looks awesome.
Yeah, more to think about. I think that's the cool thing is that. I think ultimately, and this is sort of the one thing that I miss about the old talent trees is that, and I think a lot of people are hyped up on the fact that, oh, we get to like make maybe decisions or pick certain things. I think at the end of the day, there's going to be the optimal build that you play for your raid spec, for your PvP spec, and for your Mythic Plus spec, right? and you're not going to change much. If you only do Mythic Plus, your talent tree is not going to change much, which is fine. I'm most excited about clicking buttons and putting points in things. I think to me, like, we've talked about this before, but that's the great thing. It was the great thing about artifacts. Like, you eventually clicked every button, but there's like a, there's some sort of dopamine hit that I think everybody gets in that, like, you, each time you click, even if it's like 50 times, you're like, oh, and then this connects here and it lights up, and this connects here and it lights up, and you're just like, this is amazing. I'm never going to change this. Like, I'm going to do this one time the entire expansion, and maybe like I'll mess around with things each patch coming along, but like that initial reaction, it's like, talents are great. I love them. Like, they're super
It's also, it's a big thing in leveling. It is one of those things that I think just goes a long way towards making leveling feel better. Like, I started leveling a mage recently, and just the gaps, the levels where you don't get things, or where you get something, you know, that doesn't do anything. You know, I got slow fall one level. It's like, okay, like, it does things. It will eventually do things for me, but it's not the same as getting a talent point and going to the talent tree and going like, ah, yes, I am going to go and click the button. I get to go click the button.
My fireball hits 5% harder.
Yeah. I mean, it's silly because there's stuff where I, like, you know, on my rogue, I'm like, okay, I clicked buttons on things I didn't care about in order to reach the next tier of talents, right?
Yeah.
Classic problem. It still felt fine. Like, it's just, it does impact how it feels to level. So I'm excited about that too.
Oh, yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be cool. All right. Well, I guess moving on to sort of my little deep dive feature. So I chose to sort of talk a little about dragon riding, or becoming a dragon rider, as they sort of termed it. And this is sort of a new system that is debuting with the expansion, which is essentially you get to partner up with, of course, a dragon and sort of level up that dragon and be able to traverse the world of the Dragon Isles, or traverse the Dragon Isles, much quicker. So essentially what it's adding is the ability to fly from the start. And sort of, I say fly from the start, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. But the idea is you get this
to
glide, maybe, to like...
Yeah, it's falling with style.
Yeah, exactly, Buzz Lightyear phase. But basically, this dragon doesn't fly like our typical flying mounts do, where you just sort of press up, press forward, and auto run to where you're going. There seems to be like a momentum system with it, where like you need to be able to keep speed. And if you sort of angle too far up, you'll stall out and go down. And sort of it's like gliding, I guess you could say, is the most appropriate way to view it.
The if you've played Guild Wars 2 and you've played the Heart of Thorns expansion, they have this thing called a glider that it looks a lot like this. There's not a lot of customization for the glider. There is a leveling track, like max level leveling track for the glider, which very similar in some ways to this. So many, many Guild Wars 2 analogies to be had here, but there's a lot more like customization of the dragon itself. Like, they've got screenshots of this showing the different like ways you could make your dragon look. Mm-hmm. So there's seems to be a lot going on here.
Yeah, and they talk about like a dragon riding skill tree, which seems very much like another, I don't know, I'm not going to call it a talent tree particularly, but maybe like the old pet trees or something like that, were a very simplistic version. And it seems like a very good system to do, to basically provide flying from the offset, or for the onset, right? But make it so it's not just you gain access to everything everywhere, because what the assumption is that these talents will essentially allow you to unlock new areas later on, right? So you need to have a certain level of dragon skill to like have a certain correct number of abilities or talents with your dragon that you're riding, right? That makes you, lets you go further and farther, faster, however you want to describe it. At which point then you can reach the next zone or the next area, right? Or unlock maybe an area you couldn't reach previously because you just couldn't go collect some new
treasures and
exactly. And some of like the gameplay that they showed looked really cool. I think the player had jumped off a really tall like plateau and dove straight down and then pulled up right at the end and sort of like zoomed super quick.
Classic jump off a cliff, flight form at the last second maneuver.
Exactly. But it looked really cool. They talked to one of the interview quotes from Fiesel, Jeremy Fiesel, of Secrets fame, basically talked a little bit about how this would work. You know, he described it as very arcadey, so very fast and fluid. almost arcade style. And the idea is that it's very much a, like, you take off, try and get as high as you can, dive down, and use that momentum, then go further. He also mentioned that the speeds you'll get on these mounts will be faster than typical flying mounts, which is really cool. And since they're designing the world around this, it seems like they'll be able to make the Dragon Isles feel bigger in terms of like their scope, but not in terms of their like travel time, right? The ability to still like quickly travel between areas.
Yeah. I think it's important. Like, I think it's like the top speed of this thing's going to be faster, right? But you're not going to be able to necessarily sustain that speed the whole time, because you got to build up that speed, right? So like that, again, talking about like the guy jumping off the cliff and pulling up the last second, that builds up a huge amount of momentum that then translates into like once you start gliding, like just tremendous speed, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be cool to see how that, I think for me, since this is sort of a very core system that they're trying to do, or the very core system of the expansion, they have to get the feel of this right. That's the only concern I have with this, is that if it doesn't feel good, it's going to be pretty bad, because what they also mentioned, this is the only way you can fly in the Dragon Isle. So like, while you can mount a different mount, it's only a ground mount in the Dragon Isles. So
I wouldn't be surprised if in, you know, either the final patch of the expansion or just like post expansion, they let you fly on a regular flying mount. Just maybe, as like a concession to like, okay, next expansion, you're leveling a new character through this. You're not going to spend the time collecting all the different dragon riding things.
Right.
And letting you use a regular flying mount. Maybe they don't. Maybe people are like, maybe this system like really lands and people are like picking the dragon flight leveling path when they level a new character just so they can do dragon riding. And in that case, being able to use a regular mount would almost be a disservice to that, because then it's like, you know, feels like you should use the flying mount that you've got when you have this cool dragon riding thing available. And I think that's the kind of thing they're trying to avoid by not letting you fly.
Like,
is they by giving you the choice between those two things, if you're picking the thing that's more fun but less efficient, it's going to feel bad.
Right. And the other thing I think they do too is like, if you spend enough time with sort of leveling up your dragon, like maybe it become like, while you don't get typical flying mounts in Dragon Isles, maybe your dragon turns into a typical flying mount, which is like a point and shoot type thing. Because you've gotten such a bond or whatever it is, like you've gotten enough experience where it's now an experienced dragon, it'll fly wherever you point to. Like I could see them also making that concession in like a 10-2, 10-3 style patch, right? But no, this seems like, to me, I'm actually pretty excited about this. I enjoy like weird progression systems like this, where like you just sort of like have this like kind of weird thing. It's got another bar that goes up. We know how much I love bars going up. And like the idea of like being able to like be the best dragon rider just seems super cool. Like some of the gameplay footage they did show looked really interesting. Like I said, I think the biggest thing for this to really hit is like the feel of that flight has to feel good. It can't feel like janky or like disconnected. Like I think you have to be able to get the momentum right, which I don't know if WoW as an engine has ever done very well. But maybe they can make it work here. Because they talked too about like, at a certain point, when you like leveled up enough and you're running super fast, you'll get like contrails coming off like the tips of your wings as you fly through the clouds. And I'm like, that sounds so cool, but like it might just look really dumb as you do it. Which is like what I'm most nervous about. So
I'm also very excited about this. I think it seems super neat. I will definitely take this over the kind of current standard of just like running around on ground mounts for two patches and then get flying.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is like, it's so formulaic at this point. Like, I feel like they had to make a change here. Cause it's like, even when they like, even like in Shadowlands, right. When they released flying, it was like cool. But like at that point I'm done going through the zones anyway. So it was too late for me to literally care about flying.
Right. And you also couldn't fly from Orbos to the zones. So you couldn't cut a straight path towards the dungeon you were going to do. You had to take the flight path. So if you're taking a flight path, just take it to the dungeon.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Then fly like the 20, 30 feet, whatever it ends up being, right, to get to the entrance. Yeah. And
This reminds me in a lot of ways of some of the Xerath Mortis zone stuff. But where the Xerath Mortis zone, so like the protoform synthesis, the language of the first ones or whatever it's called, thing that you do suffers a lot from it being a system in the final patch that's only relevant for this patch. And so it's not something that's relevant for the broader, like, if I'm not in Xerath Mortars, none of it matters.
Right, yeah.
So when I'm out and doing things in other areas, it doesn't matter that I've got a bunch of points in my, you know, console thing in Xerath Mortars, because that's a patch thing.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, it does feel like they're taking some of the things they learned from Xerath Mortars and saying, like, we can expand this and we can make, like, an expansion level thing out of it, not being like a raid or PvP or Mythic Plus dungeon kind of power thing, but it's still a cool thing, like protoform synthesis with the custom, the like all the different mounds you can make with that, or the different like leveling paths, the different points you can pick in the console in Xerath Mortars, and make it something that is relevant. Like when I'm out, you know, fishing or gathering or any, you know, running to a dungeon, you know, those things could be relevant now for the whole expansion, and then I will care about them more than I cared about the little box in the cave in Xerath Mortars for all of like 5 weeks until I finished my revered, and then I immediately stopped caring.
Yeah. No, and I still, I mean, the Xerath Mortars stuff is cool because like you, like thinking of that style of like collection and things like that, it'll be because you can do a ton of customization, they've said, with your dragon. So like, not only are there different dragon forms, like drakes and wyverns and proto dragons and things like that, but they said also too, like you can add like almost like armor pieces to your dragon. So like there's different even customizations around like the, maybe like a head armor piece or the, like the saddle you use to sit on and things like that can be customized. So yeah, I mean, it'll be fun to see how they add and expand the system. Cause like, this is something too that, I know it's a lot of art assets for Blizzard, right, to sort of pull together, but it's the type of like non-power system that just is cool, and they can weave it into the story in terms of like limiting players' access to things, right? So like the idea of like, they don't want flying to open up fully day one patch, because then you fly over everything, you don't actually learn about maybe the world or some of the cool like hidden stuff they put.
Yeah,
you don't just care, you just fly over it, land at what you want to kill, take off, fly to the next sort of like quest point. Yeah. Land. And this gives you the idea of like, well, you can fly, but you can't fly everywhere. And like you have a pathway to be able to like eventually reach that far off vista that you want to see, because you'll like level up your dragon enough and you can like hop your way up there, you know, whatever the pathway
is. Or maybe
is,
so. Maybe you can do something like where you, if you're really clever about it and spend time working on it, you can gain momentum to be able to actually get there. But then for a lot of people, you're going to have to actually, you know, get more points and make it easier to get there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Maybe, oh, man, I could be like an expert dragon rider, like tier number one NA. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, it looks like a very fun, like I know it's not a full progression system, but a fun system they're putting in. That, again, this is the type of system I think we talk about. Like, I'm fine with this living only in this expansion. It's cool that it's an expansion long system, but like, I don't need dragon riding in 11.0. Like, I don't need whatever the new thing is.
They did say that this is something that, you know, they're not committing to it being available outside of the Dragon Isles, basically. They're not committing to it, but they're not opposed to it, right? Like, if they implement this and people just love it and everybody goes, I want to do dragon riding in every zone all of the time, then it could become, you know, a broader system, like something that is accessible in older content, in newer content, you know, whatever makes sense. Which is actually, so to another Guild Wars 2 reference, like this is what happened with gliding in Guild Wars 2. Heart of Thorns came out. Gliding was phenomenal. And you could not do it anywhere except for the Heart of Thorns zones. And then I think they made changes in a later expansion to allow you to glide in older areas.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
So kind of like the world revamp that had to happen in Cataclysm to let you fly in older areas. That would, since they already let us fly there, they wouldn't need to do a ton of extra stuff to let you glide there. It's just like not going to be enabled right away, but it's something that could happen.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, so I mean, there's a couple other things I'm actually really excited about in the expansion. Talent, I mean, we talked about talents, which I think is a given, but this is, I think, my number two thing, honestly. in terms of like something that I'm, I don't know. I like I said, like this just seems like a cool way to introduce flying, to introduce like limits to where they want you to go in a way that makes sense, right? Like it doesn't just make sense. Like all of a sudden we can fly everywhere, yeah. right?
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely has that sort of slow burn up of being like, oh, it makes sense that I have to like put time into this and eventually I'll be able to go anywhere I want to go. But at least initially, maybe I'm only like, I'm a little baby jumper. Right. So no, I get, God, it's weird that to say this, but like, it'd be cool if they did like very almost like the old Metroidvanias do, where it's like, you see that thing right off the start that you can't get to yet, but then you come back like 10 hours later with like a bunch of equipment and like new abilities and you can get there. Like, it'd be cool if they had certain things like that in with dragon riding and being like, okay, here's like the world, but there's like these areas right around the start that like you think you can get to, but you have to wait until you're a little bit, you know, more experienced of a dragon rider. And opens up stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think dragon riding. There's a lot of things that I'm pretty excited about with this expansion launch. Like expansion announcement. Mm-hmm. There, I don't want to be like, you know, oh, it's the perfect thing. It's amazing. It's going to save. Wow, whatever.
Yeah, no.
But I think the biggest thing that I'm excited about with Dragonflight, it's not any specific like Dragonflight thing. It's reading between the lines, watching the interviews, hearing what they say, and being like, okay, this is in line with the feedback that they got from Shadowlands. This is this is them taking the things that we were frustrated by, that we complained about, that we wanted changed, and changing them. Things like talents, where like people were really frustrated about talents not changing. Like, I've played almost the exact same talents for Brewmaster for 3 expansions. So taking those and changing talents, taking borrowed power and saying, you know, we're not going to do borrowed power next expansion, but then also saying like, you know, there's pieces of the existing borrowed power that people like Convoke the Spirits or Druids, which is in the Druid tree. You can pick Convoke the Spirits. So that's like that kind of thing is taking feedback is like the number one thing that has me excited about the expansion. Number two is probably the talents though. It's probably the talents.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think that's at least the coolest initial thing. I'd like to see the next drop or the next set of information that I'd like them to see them put out is like any sort of like major class overhauls, right? Like, you know, they're coming. It would be interesting to see if they would put out like, hey, here are the classes that we think we're going to spend the most time with over this sort of expansion cycle. Here are the classes like we think are functioning like we want to, and we'll just sort of expand upon that going into 10.0, right?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So,
yeah.
So we are running up against our time. This is why we decided to not try and address all of the new stuff in the announcement. There's still several other big topics that we haven't talked about. Stuff like the professions overhaul.
Orders are massive, by the way. I know I've been like biting my tongue because I can talk about how excited about work orders.
So
like,
I think next week we are going to talk professions and auction house and work orders and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's another thing where there's just a lot of like, that's another thing people have complained about forever, of just like professions feeling anemic and not very effective. And then the direction they went with them in Shadowlands were like, legendary crafting required millions of upfront materials costs in order to make the thing that people actually wanted, and all of this stuff. Like, there's a big crafting overhaul. It impacts the auction house. There's major new auction house features. We're going to talk about that next week because we have reached the end of our episode for today. Thank you all for watching and listening. I hope you all enjoyed it, and if you did enjoy it and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can support us over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, you can come and join the Discord, patron or not, and hang out in the lounge channels and in the questions channels. Just ask questions, answer questions, hang out. Brew Lounge has been talking about F1 all day.
Go Max. Max won. Crushed. Get out of here, Leclerc and Ferrari.
My headcanon now is that this is Max from Limit, aka Liquid, is also an F1 driver.
That's you just call him Super Max. That's
yeah, name. Supermax. Okay, okay. So yeah, there's a lot of good people, a lot of good times to be had in the Discord, and you never know. One of the Discord regulars might eventually end up working at Blizzard, like a certain Shrike.
Congratulations again to her, by the way. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's it for the show today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.